Picture this. It is the summer of 1942. American naval aviators are dying at a rate that should have ended the Pacific campaign before it really began. The Mitsubishi Zero is everywhere, fast, light, impossibly maneuverable. Allied pilots in F-4F Wildcats and P-40s are coming home with airplanes that look like Swiss cheese, or they are not coming home at all. The Japanese Navy's fighter pilots are among the best trained aviators in the world, and their airplane is making them look like gods. But somebody is about to change that equation entirely. And the answer is going to come out of a factory in Bethpage, New York, built by a team of engineers who understood exactly why the Zero was winning. I'm Taildragger. Welcome to The Hangar on Radio Hangar. Before we get into it, let me tell you about today's sponsor. This episode is brought to you by AviationSoul.com, aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight. First solo, private pilot, instrument rating, all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. Every coin tells a story. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. Now back to Bethpage. The Grumman Aircraft Engineering Corporation had been building airplanes for the Navy since the 1930s. Rugged, reliable machines, biplanes, floatplanes, the Wildcat, Leroy Grumman and his team had a reputation for building things tough enough to survive carrier landings, which if you have ever watched one, you know is basically a controlled crash repeated daily. But by early 1942, it was clear the Wildcat was not going to cut it against the Zero. The F-4F was a fine airplane, honest, dependable, the kind of machine that could bring you home with holes in the fuselage, but it could not match the Zero in a turning fight, and too many good pilots were trying anyway and paying for it. Now here is where the story gets interesting. In June of 1942, a Japanese Zero pilot named Tadayoshi Koga made a forced landing on Akutan Island out in the Aleutians after being hit by ground fire. His airplane nosed over in a boggy field. Koga was killed, but the airplane was almost intact. American forces recovered it, shipped it to San Diego, fixed it up, flew it. What they learned from that airplane changed everything. The Zero was light because it had almost no armor, no self-sealing fuel tanks. It was built for speed and agility, and the Japanese had traded survivability for performance. That was the design philosophy. A Zero pilot was not expected to get shot. He was expected to shoot first and shoot better. Now here's where Grumman came in. The F-6F Hellcat was already in development when that Zero came to rest on Akutan Island. Leroy Grumman and his team had been working the problem from first principles, listening hard to what the Navy's combat pilots were reporting. The feedback from men who had actually fought the Zero was getting folded into the design in real time. The Hellcat was going to be bigger, heavier. The opposite of the Zero's design philosophy in almost every way. They were going to hang the biggest engine that would reasonably fit on a naval fighter, the Pratt & Whitney R2800 Double Wasp. 2,000 horsepower. That engine was an absolute monster. It could push the Hellcat to over 370 miles per hour at altitude. More importantly, the Hellcat was going to be armored. Self-sealing tanks, a bathtub of armor plate around the cockpit. The Zero could hit it and it would absorb the punishment and keep flying. That was the philosophy. You do not be more maneuverable, do not try to outturn it, be tougher, be harder to kill, and hit back harder. The development timeline for the Hellcat is one of the remarkable engineering stories of the war. First flight happened in June of 1942. Combat deployment was January of 1943. From drawing board to fighting over the Pacific in roughly 18 months. And this was not a half-baked airplane shoved into service early. This was a finished, combat-ready machine. The Navy was not known for rushing things, but the war had a way of accelerating schedules. The Hellcat's first real test came in August of 1943 during the Marcus Island raid. The pilots came back with something they had not felt in a long time: confidence. The airplane could take the fight to the Zero and win it. But the real proof came in June of 1944, the Battle of the Philippine Sea, what American pilots came to call the Great Marianas Turkey Shoot. The Japanese launched the largest carrier air offensive of the war, wave after wave of aircraft, and the Hellcats were waiting. In 2 days of fighting, the Imperial Japanese Navy lost somewhere around 600 aircraft. American losses were roughly 130, and many of those came during the night recovery, when pilots ran out of fuel trying to get home in the dark. Admiral Mitcher made the famous call to turn on the lights and guide his pilots in, knowing that lighting up the fleet also exposed it to submarines. His men came first. The kill ratio in that battle was roughly 19 to 1 in favor of the Hellcat. 19 to 1. By the time the war ended, Hellcat pilots had been credited with over 5,000 confirmed air-to-air victories. That is more than 60% of all naval air kills in the Pacific. No other carrier fighter came close. 12,275 Hellcats were built. That number alone tells you something about how much the Navy needed this airplane. Pull up a chair for a moment, because I want to tell you about the pilots who flew it. David McCampbell is the name that comes up first. Commander, Carrier Air Group 15, on October 14, 1944, he and his wingman went up against approximately 60 Japanese aircraft. Let me say that again, two Hellcats against 60 enemy planes. McCampbell shot down 9 confirmed kills that morning, 9 in a single mission. He came back because his Hellcat had the range to stay in the fight, the armor to absorb what was thrown at him, and the firepower to do what needed doing. He finished the war with 34 confirmed aerial victories, the leading Navy ace of the entire conflict. The Hellcat gave pilots like McCampbell the machine they needed to match their skill and their courage. Today, you can find Hellcats flying at air shows around the country. A number of them are airworthy. The sound of that Pratt and Whitney double wasp at full power is something that gets into your chest and stays there. It is not the high-pitched cry of a smaller engine. It is deep. Authoritative, the sound of serious horsepower going to serious work. The National Naval Aviation Museum in Pensacola has a beautiful example. So does the National Air and Space Museum's Udvar Hazy Center out near Dulles. If you have never stood next to one, you owe it to yourself. These things are bigger than you expect from the photographs. The wing roots are thick. The cowling is enormous. Everything about it says, "I'm here to stay." Leroy Grumman's philosophy was simple, and it saved a lot of lives. Build the airplane the pilot needs to come home in. Not the lightest airplane, not the most elegant airplane. The airplane that brings its pilot back. There's a reason the Grumman name is still spoken with a kind of reverence among naval aviators. The Hellcat is most of the reason why. Sources today include Barrett Tillman's Definitive History of the F-6F, the National Naval Aviation Museum, and the Naval History and Heritage Command. More at radiohangar.com. I'm Taildragger. Safe skies.